Blog Talk Radio.
Bye. Welcome you in the day after a huge jet victory where they now control their own destiny. Coming up in about 4 minutes, Stephen Hennessy, our friend from Golf Digest, will join us to review the year in golf. A lot happened. It's a great spot with Steve. We talk about pro golf, recreational golf, everything you'd want to hear about when it comes to golf, Steve and I will touch on in this interview that comes up in about 4 minutes. I do want to touch on this jet game. I actually understood Belichick's strategy in overtime. Sometimes you have a good feeling about your defense. You feel like you can get the ball back quickly, and you think you'll get a punt in better field position. I just don't know. It's such a risk because it's so unexpected towards the other team that it's just an emotional rise for them. And the Jets have basically admitted that it served as a huge motivational push for them. So in my eyes, it was surprising to say the least. I don't think anybody saw it. I don't think Matthew Slater certainly didn't see it coming. But I do understand Belichick's strategy. The Jets have reinserted themselves because Ryan Fitzpatrick has stopped turning the ball over and Decker and Marshall are having sensational years. That is how the Jets have done this. And they've done it without a running game and with no Chris Johnson. Bilal Powell's been a really cool threat both in the backfield and catching the ball. If Chris Ivory can get his game back in order sometime over these next couple of weeks, the Jets could really be a two-pronged threat as we head into the playoffs. They got to win or hope that Denver loses out or Pittsburgh loses their game coming up here on Sunday. But the Jets control their own destiny, and that's as much as you can hope for. And this is a Jet team under Todd Bowles that's overachieved. It's doing exactly what they were supposed to do. And it's been really fun to watch and really impressive to watch this team do their thing. So that's the story with the Jets. The Giants got blown out. I think you're going to see Tom Coughlin let go. It won't be a firing. It'll be a mutually parting of the ways. I hope Tom retires. I hope they beat the Eagles on Sunday and send Tom out a winner. He deserves to be sent out a winner. He deserves that. He deserves only the best. Great coach. Seems like a great man. This year, Giants didn't have it. Roster wasn't set up for them to succeed. But needless to say, that's a guy who will go down as a storied career and can say he won 2 rings as head coach of the Giants. And a lot of coaches would love to say that. We're back in 30 seconds with Steve Hennessy to talk golf. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, and iTunes.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
And on this post-Christmas year wrap-up edition of Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling, we welcome in from Golf Digest, the associate editor of Golf Digest, and the executive editor
of the Golf Digest Sticks newsletter, Mr. Stephen Hennessy, back to the show. Hello, sir.
Hey, what's going on, Jeremy?
I'm good. Nice to have you with me. It's funny, as I was thinking about this interview just now while sitting in traffic, the thought that came to mind for me was that if you go back to January 1st of 2015, we have Jordan Spieth with one career PGA Tour win, we have Rory on top of the world, and we have a U.S. Ryder Cup squad which is not in good shape. And since then, we've had the task force, we've had his injury, and we've had the biggest year in golf for one person probably since Tiger for Jordan Spieth. It is remarkable how much has changed in this past 52 weeks.
Yeah, you couldn't have really thought about all that's happened that could happen. You couldn't have predicted a lot of it. You know, you knew Spieth had the potential for great things, but for him to win the first two majors and have a chance at the Grand Slam on the 72nd hole at St. Andrews, you couldn't have thought that was a great possibility of happening. You couldn't have thought that Ricky Fowler would have such a career year, Jason Day emerging. You know, these are all things that you could have predicted, and they might have been semi-bold predictions, but these all sort of happened. So it kind of goes into why 2015 was great for golf in general, because so many great storylines came together throughout the year to make it what it was.
And for me, you know, you look at that Ryder Cup and all the ramifications that it had, and the fact that the U.S. finally seems together on this and on the same page, and whether it pays off at Hazeltine, who knows. But it's interesting how this all goes back to the 2012 Ryder Cup, in a sense, with that collapse, and now Davis getting a second chance. And that 2012 Ryder Cup came full circle this year because of the engagement for Rory to Erica Stoll, the woman who saved the European Ryder Cup team's butt on that Sunday for the comeback when he was able to get to the golf course in time. It is remarkable in both personal lives and in the whole golf sphere how much these last two Ryder Cups have had an impact on things in 2015.
Yeah, now Erica's back in the mix again. I mean, I don't know how much the task force, I'm sort of in the side of the room that, you know, what could this really do? And we'll see how much it's really done in 2016 and the next couple of Ryder Cups, and maybe the impact will be felt down the road. But what it comes down to is, are the players going to make big shots and rally around each other when they need to? And that obviously came to a dramatic, fallout at Medina, and terrible loss that was on Sunday. And then 2014 was embarrassing at Glen Eagles. So, it can only go up from here, and what the last couple of Ryder Cups have been like. I think the Americans have lost 7 of the last 8. So it was time to do something, and a task force, you know, for better or for worse, it shows at least a little initiative on the U.S. side, which is, you know, a difference from past years at least.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that has happened in the world of golf since you were last on the show is Tiger's press conference at his event, the Hero World Challenge. And I think a lot of us who watched that left that press conference stunned. Like, is this a guy, you know, he says there's no light at the end of the tunnel. He has no timetable. Wondering openly if he'll ever do anything again in this game, saying everything from here on out is gravy. But it's interesting, if you look at his comments on that Sunday in the broadcast booth, if you look at what he told Time Magazine, if you look at his year-end blog post last week, that there has been a progression towards the positive, and that this is not a guy anywhere close to retiring. This is a guy who wants to be successful in this game once again. What was your thoughts when you first saw that press conference, and what are your current thoughts about what we'll see from Tiger come 2016?
Well, I think what you heard from Tiger and what you've heard over the last month is sort of the evolution of Tiger in his life, really, because since the time he was, you know, 6 years old, he's been motivated to be the best golfer in the world, and he had just a fury of going all out toward achieving his dream of, you know, matching Jack Nicklaus' record and getting above that, above the 18 major mark. And now, finally, you know, when he's 40, he's going to turn 40 in a couple of days here, he's sort of coming to the point where he's accepting the fact that, well, that might not be possible, but hey, look, I've achieved great things in my career, and he's kind of accepting that for the first time. So, you know, before he was this ultra-motivated guy, you know, never accepting what he's accomplished, the barrier for him, and he's finally come to a point where, hey, I have all this crazy stuff that went on in my personal life, but I have a great family as a result. I had the ultra pressure on me for 15 years where I was at the peak of professional golf, and that was his dream for so many years. And he achieved it. He won 14 majors by the time he was, whatever, 32 or 33, and that's a remarkable achievement. So he's a completely changed guy, you know, mentally. And physically, that's a different matter. He's beat up like no golfer probably ever. I mean, Ben Hogan had the accident, but, I mean, just physical injuries over time. He came back way too early from a couple injuries, and he's acknowledged that for the first time ever. The microdiscectomy in 2014 kind of rushed back, and I think that's what kind of stopped his year from progressing this year, and this is the result that he might not play next year. He sounds optimistic about playing, but he's more accepting of the fact that, you know, this is where he is now. He's a 40-year-old golfer who there's another year or two left of him competing with the best golfers in the world, and that's a good thing. And if he's, you know, capable of playing in majors, if it's not next year, then the following year and the year after that, and he's back to healthy and he's back to having a swing that, you know, he could work with and, you know, compete at the highest level of major championships, then, hey, he is capable of winning another one or two majors. I have no doubt about that. But he's finally has the patience in himself in being able to achieve those things. So that is my biggest takeaway, that it's just a different mindset than he's had in his life. And that's an extraordinary change for him, for a professional athlete like him. And it kind of coincides with Peyton Manning, Kobe Bryant, Derek Jeter, you know, calling it quits or nearing the end of their careers. So, and the press conference came like a week after Kobe Bryant was calling it quits. So I think that's why Tiger was a little more reflectionary than he's ever been before, is he kind of sees those guys as his friends, his peers, you know, their fellow athletes who are at the top of their games at the same time as he was. So, certainly interesting to see what he does next year. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play maybe one or two of the majors, but I'm more excited now for 2 years or 3 years down the road about Tiger's chances of the majors than perhaps I was even before the press conference.
Interesting. It's an interesting point of view, and we'll see what happens next year. Talking with Stephen Hennessy from Golf Digest. What a year it's been for Jason Day. I never would have thought when he went down on that ninth green on Friday at the U.S. Open with a bout of vertigo that he would have the rest of the year that he did. But if you think about it, he finally, I think that was the point where he said, I'm not going to tee it up again until I get the proper diagnosis for this. He went to Ohio State. They gave him the proper diagnosis. That's now behind him, and he was able to finally play free golf without having to think about it, and he got the first major, which all of us have seen coming for years and years.
Yeah, you're right. That moment at the U.S. Open, I don't think anyone would have expected him to, A, be right in the mix at St. Andrews and have a really good chance at winning, and then run away with the PGA Championship the way he did. I mean, Jason Day's always been the talented guy who never had a major. Vertigo, you know, checked out. She rose to the top of the game, number one in the world, and really impressed at the end of 2015. So you got to think the sky's the limit for him in 2016.
Yeah. All right, now time for best of and most unusual moments, which are always fun things to reflect on when you're looking back at the year. For me, the best moment in professional golf, for me, wasn't anything Jordan Spieth did at the majors or later in the year. It was that playoff in Tampa and down the stretch on Sunday at Tampa, and then in that playoff at Tampa versus Patrick Reed versus Sean O'Hare. The ups and downs, the putt on 18 in our regulation, the putt to win in the playoff. He was a guy with one win who had a knock on him for not being able to close. That playoff got a better rating than the NCAA tournament selection show it was played up against. And I think that moment and that hour of golf in Tampa is the catapult to what Spieth did the rest of the year. And most people have forgotten about it, which is stunning because it was an insane display of golf.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That might have sparked his whole 2015 run of, you know, great wins and great success, taking down Patrick Reed the way he did. It's compelling TV. It's the reason why it got the ratings it did. That was an awesome moment.
Yeah. For you, what tops that list professionally?
I'm going to go a little off the cuff here. When Phil Mickelson slid on his rear end down at Whistling Straits, that was the funniest frigging thing I've ever seen. Could not believe that he did that. The fact that Phil Mickelson, of all people, I mean, you know, if it was something like Billy Horschel or Ricky Fowler did that, it's just, you know, they're young and just, you know, doing whatever. But Phil Mickelson sliding down the dunes at Whistling Straits, that was my favorite moment, and the way it went viral, the way it did, it still cracks me up to watch that.
There's a whole separate show we could have, Steve, about Phil Mickelson and where he is in his life, because it's fascinating. Between things like that, the fun side, the serious side, how his game seems lost, how his game with one swing tip about his posture seemed to come back at the President's Cup, and now with a brand new coach, there's a whole separate show we could do about Phil Mickelson for towards next year. In terms of stuff you saw, whether it was in your personal playing life, whether it was while on tour, whether it was at a Golf Digest shoot or some Golf Digest event, what's the moment that'll stick with you from this year?
Well, playing Pebble Beach in May with my family for the first time, playing Pebble Beach was great. Seeing Steph Curry then in the grill after, you know, he was taking pictures and signing autographs with everyone 2 weeks after he had won the NBA Finals and the MVP, just shaking people's hands. He was awesome with everybody, and that was certainly a moment for me, you know, mixed with my family and Steph Curry, who's at the top of basketball and pro sports. That was certainly cool. In terms of pro golf, I would say being on a cover photo shoot for Golf Digest with Jordan Spieth at the Players was pretty cool right after his Masters win. Just watching him and observing him, taking everything in, being professional, taking the time to go through all different shots with us. And we set up a little putting obstacle course in the hotel lobby there at Players. And watching it, we put two bar glasses down the hallway. It was about 75 feet of a putt. For anyone who didn't see the video, we asked him a couple questions, just sort of simple answers, you know, Chipotle or Taco Bell, and then he'd have to give his answer. And he was really funny about it and gave these awesome answers as he hit these putts. But for just watching the video, I don't think you appreciate how good he was at that. We didn't give him any practice time. We just put the glass down the hallway, and it took him two or three putts hidden on the carpet of this hotel lobby. And, you know, he's like, move the glass just a little bit to the right. And sure enough, one putt later, he drains it. It just shows you how great of a putter he was. And he accepted this challenge, you know, so you know, he was just a great guy to work with. He was so into it, professional, all that. So for me, that's probably the coolest thing we did this year.
That video was so cool, and the Steph Curry cover video from 2 months ago was also fantastic. Everybody should check that out. Check that out on golfdigest.com. For me, and I don't have a great answer to this in terms of anything that can somehow equal that. But one of the rounds that I played with my uncle this year, we got to the course and it was so foggy you couldn't see down the first fairway. And if it was a PGA Tour event, they would have had to blow the horn, and there were people playing through the fog, which is the ultimate feel test. You know, you can't see where your ball's landing. You know, trust your feel. So that was a really cool moment, because I've played in a ton of weather conditions over the years. Fog is not something that I've ever played in before. Most unusual moment, I will kick this off either personally or on tour / Golf Digest. For me, I played around the golf at the Bowling Green Golf Course in North Jersey. And it was my college roommate and then two of his friends and myself. And we get to the first hole and we hit two shots and it starts pouring. I mean, just deluge. Not dangerous, just pouring. Obviously, these people are not going to play through this. So we pull over under a tree. We wait 25, 30 minutes. It blows right through. We then play the next 14 holes, I guess it is, after waiting 25, 30 minutes. We get to the 15th green, which goes back to the clubhouse. They all wanted to leave because this round took longer than, you know, expected. I said, okay, see ya. I wanted to finish the last three holes because I had a horrible front nine but a great back nine going. So I said, okay, I'm going to finish this. And I get to the 16th hole, and the sky opens up, and I'm like, oh, God. And I quickly realize there's no way I'm finishing this round. I somehow finished the 16th hole, drove back to the clubhouse, went in the shop for 25 minutes, let the rain pass through. I was soaking wet. I wound up going to the Livingston Mall and walking in the Macy's and buying myself a new sweatshirt because I was too wet and cold to drive home in the clothes I was wearing. It was one of those rounds that you don't soon forget. It was just utterly bizarre, and it is by far the most bizarre non-finished round of golf I've ever played.
I think your friends, if they're listening to this for the holidays, they should buy you a nice rain jacket and rain pants for next year when that happens.
Yeah, exactly. And I had my rain coat on, but it was so wet that everything else got wet. Any moment for you stack up to that kind of unusualness?
Well, I'll go unusual in terms of the tour, and what I'll remember from last year was Keegan Bradley and Miguel Angel Jimenez just going at it in San Francisco. That was such a bizarre moment that we never see in golf, that, you know, two pro golfers at the top of the game are ready to literally throw down fisticuffs. Like, they were so close to actually punching each other. They, you know, cursing back and forth in each other's faces with the caddies involved. I was watching that live and, you know, got up on, I was on the edge of my seat, come on, let's go. I was ready for Keegan to throw a haymaker, you know, Miguel to wrestle into the ground. That would have been awesome. It was a moment we don't get in golf, and it got a huge amount of attention. So when you're talking unusual, that's what came to mind for me.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people don't know is that these guys have security, some of which are cops, especially for the bigger players, some of which may be, you know, some kind of official. But there's nobody there that would have broken that up immediately. There's not like they were bouncer-type people who would have suddenly rushed out and blocked that. They seriously could have had a fight before somebody broke that up.
PGA Tour rules official is, you know, 6'2", 250 guy, and he wouldn't be able to get in, you know, and break up a fight with Keegan. You know, a fan or something would have had to get between them to break that up. It could have gotten ugly, and I think that's what made it so compelling.
And Keegan is from Boston, and a huge Boston hockey fan, and anybody who has watched those Bruins over the years knows that kind of heritage he probably those kind of games he probably watched growing up. And you know, he's one fierce competitor. That's all you can say about Keegan. He is one fierce competitor.
Absolutely.
Steve Hennessy, Golf Digest. Ready for 2016?
Yeah, of course. Let's go. You know, how can we top that in golf? It's going to be tough professionally, but hopefully, you know, we have a golf audience captivated by last year that everyone's going to tune in, and I'm pumped for it and pumped to keep getting better in golf myself, as everyone is. You know, you should set goals for yourself for next year. If I had one piece of advice for everybody, is watch your swing on the video. You know, if not professionally, then just have a friend do it and kind of watch it frame by frame and compare it to a professional golfer, because that's what I did for the first time this year. I was like a 25 handicap or something, and you know, got down to like a 13 or a 14. Just understanding my swing and what your swing should look like on plane and how you could adjust it sort of on the range and take that to the course, and you know, how to just get better even when you're struggling through a round. If you have the understanding of your swing and what you could do to make that better, sky's the limit. So there's my advice for 2016.
And I'm so glad you mentioned that, because people think, oh, I don't have the whole Konica Minolta BizHub swing vision setup. But the simple slow-mo camera on your smartphone is so good these days that is all you need, really. That simple slow-mo setup can tell you so much. I'm so glad you said that.
Boom. Yeah, there you go. We're dropping handicaps for everybody. It's our holiday gift for the year.
Yeah, exactly.
You're welcome.
Steve Hennessy, Golf Digest, thanks as always for coming on the show, and happy holidays.
All right, Jeremy, happy new year, man. Cheers.
That last point that he said is so crucial. Just look at your swing. Yes, PGA professionals are great. Yes, gaining knowledge through written publications, print publications, TV is great. But you got to be able to see your own swing, and then from that, see your own positions. If you can do that and make that correlation between what I feel, what I see, and what I should be doing, your handicap will drop, and kudos to Steve, who has seen his handicap drop. That is all for this edition of Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, and iTunes. I will see you back Sunday morning, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, for the Sunday Sprint alongside Luke Morrow. Preview Week 17 in the National Football League. Enjoy your evening. Enjoy your week, everybody. Have a great night, and goodbye.